Welcome to Alt Expo at Porkfest 2012. We are here at Rogers Campground, Lancaster, New Hampshire, at the Porcupine Freedom Festival. I'm Stephanie Murphy, and with me are
Garrett
three
Fox.
Different people. Garrett actually organized the panel. I'm just introducing
And
it.
You can see how good of a job I did organizing that, too.
It's very professional.
Yeah. Give me the mic. Let's go.
So you're Garrett. I'm Stephanie from Pork Therapy. That's my podcast. PORCtherapy.com is the website where you can find out more. I'm also a radio host on Free Talk Live every Sunday night and sometimes a little more often than that. And Garrett, your show?
Yeah, I'm just doing a weekly one right now. I'd like to get into doing some more. The whole live world is scary. Just even talking right now in front of people.
What's your website?
The Disindoctrination Podcast. It's disindoctrination.com. I have to constantly remind people that it's not disinfo.com, but disindoctrination.com. And we just try and spread ideas about learning. Our little catchphrase that we've been throwing around is learning to learn. And
all right. And we have Bile here also. Bile, would you like to introduce yourself?
My name's Antonio, and or Bile, and I have a podcast that's currently not on the air, but you can still get the archives. It's called Thinking Liberty at thinkingliberty.net.
And Brett?
My name is Brett Vinat, and my show is School Sucks Podcast, and our website is schoolsucksproject.com.
All right, so thanks for the intros, and I don't know how long we've all been podcasting. I started getting into it in about 2009, so that makes it almost 3 years that I've been into podcasting. So, and Brett, you've been in it longer than that, right?
No, August 2009 was when we started.
Okay, so 6 years between the two of us and you guys?
Two and a half years.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I'm the baby. I just started doing it last January, but...
Okay, so we have approximately 10 years of podcasting experience between the four of us. This sounds very professional. And, I think all of our shows are quite different, although we all focus on maybe a common thread of liberty, ideas of freedom.
I think so, yeah.
Just to kind of plan out our time a little bit, I don't know how you want to do this, guys. Do you want to each talk for 10 minutes, or do you want to address certain areas? I was thinking we could talk about... One, content, and sort of what's your vision for your show, and how do you plan to structure the show so it can accomplish your goals for what you want to do with your podcast, and then also how to make money off of a podcast is another thing, because we want them to be self-sustaining, I guess. Unless you're independently wealthy, you probably want the podcast to at least pay for itself. Another thing we could talk about is sort of equipment and sound quality. Those are very important if you want to get people to listen. And... on-air technique, maybe another thing. So I don't know if you guys each want to talk about all those things, or you just want to have all of us talk for 10 minutes and then have people ask questions.
We could start with content and just go down the line.
That's very the most important. It's the bread and butter.
Sure.
So, yeah, Brett, why don't you start?
Well, for my show, being that it was kind of the trick with having a show that focuses on a certain niche is that it becomes a challenge to keep it fresh. So my show deals with school and education. And I want the message of the show to be accessible to not just kids, because I don't know why it took me a year to figure out that kids were not going through the education section of podcasts on iTunes. Kids are on YouTube, so that's why I moved a lot of the stuff there. But I wanted, as far as content was concerned, I wanted to be able to cover a broad enough scope of school issues that it could possibly draw up something for everyone, from their past where they say, this had a negative impact on me. This was an opportunity cost. And I'm not just talking about government school. I'm talking about college as well. And the sort of cultural conditioning that is inflicted upon people between, the time they learn how to talk and the time that they officially become adults in the United States, which I think is 27. So if there were enough angles that this was explored from, then everybody could understand. Because I think for a lot of people, who aren't familiar with a lot of these ideas, they would just say, yeah, school is school. It wasn't great. It's what you do. You know, it happens to everybody. You know, it's not bad if it happens to we all go to school. So to really try to bring up some things that they might not have noticed or just were so normalized through that whole experience. And, you know, after 12 years of having to get permission to talk and use the bathroom, there isn't, as far as, you know, moving towards a voluntary society, 12 years of that experience, there isn't much after that that isn't going to seem like freedom, you know? So people also don't recognize how unfree they are in the adult world because they've been so conditioned through the schooling. So I try to balance my show. I do not a really great job between problems and solutions. So I try to break things into different series of shows and organize them that way on the website, or code them, say, this is Keys, which is what we call a series of shows where we talk about solutions and alternatives. I have a news series, and then I do individual series like, I did a series called American History F'd, about the history that we learn in government school and how it needs to be adjusted for reality. I recently did a series, or it's kind of an ongoing series called Kids Are Not Defective, which really focuses on the messages that don't just come from school, but from society, from culture, from religion, from family. So I also want, even though the content is varied, that people can go through the feed or go through the website and be able to find something interesting that they're looking for.
So there's some organization to it, as well as just covering sort of a variety of topics. They're all tied together with a common thread, but if somebody's looking for something specific, they can easily find it. And that's important, too, because if you're putting out a lot of content, you want people to be able to jump to something that that interests them, like a keyword or a subject or a tag of some kind. And you can kind of do that with... you can tag your podcasts in iTunes when you publish them. You can tag them on your blog if it's a blog post. And we'll get to all that, too. But I think Brett's very passionate about, you know, this message, right, Brett? And I can tell when you talk about it. So that's a very key ingredient. You know, find something that you're knowledgeable about or that you want to become knowledgeable about. And you have the passion to bring that message to other people. And I think that's integral to success as a podcaster. Because if you like it, you're going to want to keep doing it. And sometimes it's hard. You know, sometimes there are days where you just don't feel like doing a show. And if you're a podcaster, as opposed to you have a regularly scheduled live show every week, that kind of pushes you to keep on schedule. But if you're a podcaster, you can kind of say, well, I'll let it go another day. It's no big deal. But like we said before, you know, consistency is important for the listeners. And if you want to find out how many people are listening to your podcast, stop making your podcast. You'll get all the complaint emails. Where is the next episode?
It happens all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure it happens to you guys.
Thinking Liberty hasn't had a show since January. And we get lots of complaints.
Well,
I'm one of the complainers.
You're one of the complainers.
Yeah. So he's one of our fanboys.
So thinking about content is the first step, I would say. And then once you have a sort of a rough sketch of what you want the show to be like, maybe some sort of gimmicks or unique things about the show, like Brett has a, you know, different series or keys that describe what's in there, you can start thinking about a name, a logo, sort of how you're going to brand the show. It's important to have a URL that people can figure out easily and recognize. And, you know, some of us have... later, I guess, regretted maybe the choice because people have gotten confused or whatever by URLs or names. So think about it carefully because it's hard to change. You can change the name or the website or whatever, but it's more difficult once you're established with it. You know, make a Facebook page, Twitter, YouTube account, everything you can think of to get out there, social media. And always encourage your fans to share the show. They're your best friend when it comes to promotion because... you can't do all your own promotion yourself. You gotta do a little bit of it, of course, but the best advertising is when people tell their friends about your show because they love it so much and they want to share it. So that's where you're really going to get the big return, I guess, in terms of sharing. Podcasts traditionally are free. I don't know very many people who have been successful with charging for their podcasts, you know. Maybe Susie Bright would be the one exception, but she was pretty famous before she started a podcast. She's a sex educator, and she charges, I think, $1 for each podcast or something like that. But most podcasts are free, so you're going to have to figure out how to, if you want to make money off of a podcast or have it be self-sustaining, you're going to have to figure out how to do that while giving away all of your content for free. And so that can be a challenge, but there are lots of creative ways to do so. You can have ads on your show. Some people choose not to go that route because they don't like ads. You can have merchandise. You can have ads on your blog. You can have sponsors for your shows who maybe they want to promote a product, or maybe they just love what you're saying, and so they give you money or give you equipment like microphones or things like that. You can, I don't know, I guess you can give away, like promotional giveaways are another thing that some podcasters do to promote different products. Do you guys think of any other ways to get creative and make money off of a podcast? Subscriptions, right?
Beg.
Right.
Beg a lot.
What, beg?
Beg. That's what we did.
Yeah, you can ask for donations. Forgot to say that. Yeah. You can have like sort of a freemium model with a section that has bonus content, like Brett can say, speak to that.
The progression for me was like when I first started, I was really uncomfortable asking people for money.
I think everybody is.
Yeah, and yeah. I was like,
we weren't.
But you guys had more of a production, right? Like you you were streaming video. You had a room full of people. You had really good quality. Like from the beginning, it seemed like you guys knew.
I put a lot of effort into making sure that it was as professional as possible off the get, because we came from a scenario where, just turn it down. I'll talk closer to the mic.
Okay.
Sorry. So we took the production in our own hands because we had a streaming radio station that was crap. They lost a show where we had a really important interview with Charles Johnson and Roderick Long, mm-hmm. and they lost the whole show.
Oh.
And after that, we were like, yeah, we're going to do this ourselves from now on. And we streamed through them, but it was all done in my apartment with our own equipment.
Well, that's another important issue. Tip, I guess, if I could just interrupt real quick, is backup. Backup recording, backup your files, your archives. No one else is going to do that for you. So
yeah, and it can be a little tricky depending on your setup. I only use open source software, including the operating system. So doing podcasting with Linux only can be a little bit more troublesome than on Windows. Mm.
Because does Audacity run on Linux?
Yes, it does. Okay. I think it probably ran on Linux before Windows, but it's an open. It's a cross-platform application. Runs on Mac, Windows, and Linux.
Should we speak to the software that we use real quick, or some of the technical issues, or did you have more that you wanted to say?
No, but with regards to money, we tried to put on a very professional show, and there's four of us typically that do the show. It's a very dynamic show, and we wanted to advertise more, so we just asked for donations, and we were doing it on our own dime because it was enjoyable, mm-hmm. and then as people... You know, we're like, oh, like Free Talk Live Amp, sure, send us money and we'll spend it on advertisement. And actually, we haven't been on air since January and we still get donations for people because we still advertise and people still download. I mean, just the other day, I got a guy who found the show on iTunes and listened to like 10 episodes and he was begging us for new content. And that happens once a week.
Yeah, and podcasts, the thing about them is they're timeless. And so even if you make a new episode years later or months or weeks later, someone could find it and pick up something they really like from it. That's one of the great things about podcasting.
Yeah, but consistency, though, is very important, I think. We had every Tuesday, 8 to 10, two-hour show, and we had live aspects. We had a chat room. We had live video feeds or whatnot, and it really brought everyone in. Like, actually, Garrett should probably talk to what it was about our show that brought everyone in.
Well, it's actually like a little community of people on there. It's like before G+ even came out and you had the hangouts and all that stuff, it was like being able to go listen to this show and then they're talking about whatever and then all of a sudden somebody says something in the chat room and it's like we hear them talking about us in the show. Like me and Zach Fix would constantly be on there talking about whatever. Let's get them to talk about rep raps or something. And it would happen. So it was like you're playing along with the podcast.
By the way, you mentioned Google Plus, Garrett.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Google Plus They have a feature called Hangouts, which is basically a multi-person video chat. And so I think this is going to change podcasting and make it a lot easier for people to get into video casting, because you can have essentially a meeting between three or four or more co-hosts on Google Plus, and then you can send the entire video straight to YouTube after that. And you can, I think you can now, there's some way to record it. I haven't really played with it myself because this feature just went live like very recently, but it was being, highly anticipated by a lot of different people. So this might make it a lot more accessible for people to get into video podcasting.
It's a good segue for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the other thing too, with if your show has a certain focus that's very narrow, I think it's important to find ways to keep it fresh, to every 6 months be doing something new that you hadn't done before. Because on the topic of education, you can keep doing the bad news, kids taken out of school and arrested for drugs, corruption, unions. But you only have to do all that stuff once, and if you're convincing and you're thorough, people know what's going on. So the goal of a podcast like that would not be to trap people into this negativity. And yes, it's important for people to understand how bad things are with government schools and how severe the situation is when it comes to higher education in this country today, how worthless like a college degree is becoming. But it can't just all be problems, and it can't just be that we do problems and solutions. I think that for the whole production, not just the podcast and its content, always needs to be freshened up every few months. So what we tried to do recently was transition not only into doing a live show similar to what Bile was talking about, also streaming it as video using a website and a software called Ustream, which we could do a whole other I could do a whole other presentation just about Ustream, which would not be very positive at this point, but we're working through it. And I think a lot of it is things that I didn't know about it, or I don't understand exactly how the software works on my computer with my equipment. And obviously when you pay for software, if you can imagine such a thing, it's very frustrating sometimes when it doesn't do exactly what you need it to do. Like I bought another program. I actually went home Wednesday to buy software, download it, install it, and then come back so we could video the Thursday show that we did up here. And it didn't work perfectly. And that's a really frustrating thing. But the video was a new aspect that I thought would freshen things up, and it would also make it more interactive. Ustream has really neat features like a chat built into the page, and you can just take the video feed and embed it right on your website. So you can just have a tab in your nav bar that says TV or live, and people can click on it, and there you are live, and there's a chat right below it. And we doing it as a call-in show allows more voices to come into the conversation. I've done 150, 160 episodes. We're talking maybe 150 to 250 hours of content, I'm not sure, that has mostly just been my voice with the occasional guest. So to be able to bring listeners into the show and do something that's interactive was really important for me. So that has been the latest step. It is something that I wouldn't try to do. This is just my advice. I mean, if you, and I'm like at the lowest level as far as technical skills are concerned and having an aptitude for that kind of stuff. But for me, if you feel like you're challenged in that respect, or you don't have the time to learn new things, I would try to do one and then the other. So like the 2.5 year gap between learning the audio and then transitioning to video was just perfect for somebody with my skill level. You know, maybe others could, I'm thinking most other people could probably move a little faster, but once the audio got to where I want it, once I knew what I was doing in all aspects of the audio, that's when we were ready to make this transition to doing both. So the live show I'm using as a supplement to the podcast that is not live, that's just me, more topical, more produced shows that include, video clips or that, in the show are audio clips, but they have a higher production value than just a live call-in show. with a live call-in show is something that will go with that. And that also allows us to produce more content, you know, and to take all of this stuff that has just been sitting on iTunes or sitting on Podomatic in a podcast feed, and now we can move these ideas to YouTube, you know, and just start populating YouTube, even if they're just two-minute clips of, you know, me and my co-host talking or taking a phone call or dealing with an issue. It's at least now in the right place. And the cool thing with Ustream is if you have, you record a whole show, Ustream will record it for you. It can go to your hard drive or they store it on their website, I think up to like 15 gigabytes or something like that. You remember something happening in the show that was a powerful moment, a funny moment. You just find the video. You can do this right on the Ustream website. You clip it to the part you want, you know, 2 minutes, 1 minute, 5 minutes, and then you make it a highlight clip and you just send it to YouTube. So you can be, while you're still doing long, thorough audio and video podcast, you can just be sending your best material straight to YouTube without having to download or upload anything. So that's a feature I really like about Ustream. But for what I'm doing, I know that the stuff has to be on YouTube.
Yeah, so a couple of things you said just there, Brett, kind of struck me, and I wrote them down to come back to. Mm-hmm. One of them was co-hosts. So I know it's easier, kind of, I think especially when you're first starting out in podcasting or radio, it is definitely easier to fill a show or to produce content when there's more than one person because you can bounce ideas off of each other. Just like what just happened right now, Brett, you know, yep. You made me think of something. So I wrote it down and then we came back to it and we're sort of having a discussion. And all four of us are too on this panel. So when there are more people, there's more content and it's easier to make stuff. But at the same time, you got to get everyone together somehow to record, whether that's on Skype, and that can produce some issues with audio quality sometimes, and it can be a little technically difficult sometimes to get guests on. So there's always scheduling as well. So it can be easier at the same time if you're only relying on yourself to do a podcast. So I guess you have to sort of think about what you want in terms of content and in terms of the format of the show, whether you want it to always be a cast of co-hosts or whether there's, you know, sort of one person there consistently and the other co-hosts rotate or it's just you.
Depends on what you're trying to do too. Yeah. Like, so what we're trying to do with the live show is a lot of shows have cams. A lot of live shows have cams. Like Free Talk Live has a cam when they're in their studio, but it's nothing more. And it's a nice feature and a lot of people really like it, but all it is a cam of them doing a radio show. So what we wanted to do was to have on-screen graphics, to be able to take capture frames from my screen and play them as video so people could see videos while they're watching the live show that are coming from my computer. We wanted to be able to switch between, I had this dream of like four cameras. That was impossible. We figured out how to do two in HD and one SD, like establishing shot, like from a distance so you could see everything that was going on, and then put one HD camera on two hosts and one HD camera on me and switch them back and forth and, you know, have on-screen graphics. And if anyone wants to see it after, I can show you some clips of what we've done. I'm actually pretty proud of it, even though it's been very frustrating leading up to this point. But co-hosts are important. If you have, like, technical aspects of a show that you're trying to manage, we all know the feeling, like you especially, I think, would know the feeling of hosting Free Talk Live and something goes wrong.
Yeah.
And it's a technical issue and you're just like,
Well, yeah. Pork Therapy too is a live show every Friday night, and I'm managing taking the calls, I'm organizing the topics, writing them down for later use, recording the show, making sure I'm still connected and streaming the live show out. So I usually refer to myself as a one-armed paper hanger when I'm hosting the show, which is totally true because there's a lot to think about. So if you are someone who really maybe doesn't enjoy or isn't very good at multitasking, a co-host would probably be a lot better. You know, it would be a little security in case something goes wrong.
And the truth is that if I really wanted everything to be done right, there should be a producer who is dealing with the cameras. I'd actually like to hear how Bile did it.
Sure.
Yeah, so actually I'm the producer of Thinking Liberty, though I am a co-host on occasion, but primarily it was Tennyson, Darian Warden, and Bosco. So Most of the time, I would be controlling the controls at the control center, as they would generally say, sitting at my desk with a computer, two computers, and a bunch of equipment, making sure the levels were right, making sure that that the computer for our calls and for Skype went into the recording computer, or into the mixer and then into the recording computer. Two computers. And the reason for that is if you're doing podcasting and you are using the internal sound card for your device, you're going to end up often with loopbacks, ground loops, and a lot of noise. They're not very good sound cards. They're connected to all the other electronics within your system. And it can provide a lot of noise to your that can sometimes be taken out in post-processing, but ideally you don't want to have to do that. So by using external sound cards, which you can get for like $20, external USB sound cards, and then using a manual mixer, I just took one computer, actually it's my HTPC for my entertainment center, plug that into the mixer, and then all that gets plugged into a laptop with an external sound card, and that way I limit the ground loops and any sort of distortion that generally comes in.
And yeah, this is a good segue to talk about equipment and yeah. sound quality and making a creating a professional sound.
Yeah. So back quickly to having co-hosts. So I would pretty much run the show, and that's why if you ever listen, I'm rarely talking. But I make sure the mics are working. I get everyone to check the mics beforehand, and then move on to starting the music and fade outs and taking calls. All that's done by me, and that actually takes like 75% of my time. So even though I'm not totally paying attention the whole time, I have like you always have your peripheral vision on all those other aspects. So having a producer is great for a live show. Hardware wise, yeah, we just had four random mics and a Behringer mixer. Behringer. They're not great, but they're inexpensive, and I think we have a 12 channel input mixer, costs like less than $100 used, about $100 new, and that was like 2 years ago. The mics cost us $80, a couple XLR cables, and
XLR is this, if anyone's listening.
They're powered microphones, and let's see, I mean, I already had the laptop and the other computer. We used my plasma TV for the host to be able to see what was going on in the chat room and the video feed, and I had an inexpensive webcam, and that's about it. Except for, I think we eventually started using microphones because Tennyson would always talk off the microphone. He'd always look sideways and talk to Bosco or something and never keep the mic in front of his face. So I forced them to use or headphones, and we got a distributor. So that was another $100, I think, altogether. Yep.
So a lot of people, when they start out in podcasting, especially if they're doing a solo show, will have a USB microphone that plugs directly into their computer. And I brought an example of one that's, I just use it for mobile broadcasting, like interviews and stuff like that for my show. This is the Blue Yeti. I love the name. My first microphone was actually the Blue Snowball, made by the same company, so it's a little bit downgraded version of this. But as you can see, there's a few controls on the microphone, but they're pretty minimal. You can plug headphones into the microphone itself and hear feedback of your own voice, what it sounds like. But the main advantage is this goes directly into the computer, so you don't have to deal with a mixer or anything like that. You just plug and play and record. And I think we mentioned this briefly, but a lot of people use a free open source software called Audacity. It's a cross-platform, as Bile was saying. And there's another software that I like to use as a companion to Audacity called Levelator. Levelator is an algorithm that I like to call the podcaster's best friend, because if you have an audio file that has differences in the sound volume at different spots, what you can do is run it through this program Levelator, and it will equalize the volume throughout the whole file, so it sounds a lot more consistent.
Yeah, I really didn't like that program.
Oh, really?
I tried several different normalizers, or compressors, and I ended up coming across a plugin for Audacity that I thought was a lot better.
Oh, okay.
It got a lot less peaks, but I can't remember the name offhand.
Okay.
So Audacity now has, the newer version of Audacity has a built-in compressor.
Yeah, it's not very good either.
It's not. You don't think it's very good?
There's the plugin I found was known for being better than all those others, and doing independent tests for my show at least, and everyone's show is different. Everyone has different voices, and the kind of music you play can affect it. So for my show, it seemed that other software seemed a lot better. It's a plugin for Audacity, and if you look up like compressors for Audacity, you might be able to find it. I think the guy's last name that made it was Ninquist or something.
You remember that, but not the name of it.
I don't remember, but.
Okay, so there are lots of different software. You're going to have to play around with it, but those are some suggestions.
Definitely before using any levelator or normalizers or whatever, please like run a couple across whatever the final product is and take a quick listen, because sometimes it can totally blow out the voices depending on...
Yeah.
Because we had 4 to 5 people on, and you know, Darian is very bombastic and loud, and Tennyson is very soft-spoken
Liberty.
And barely speaking into the mic at all.
That would be a problem with levelator, because if a person talks, you know, just has a softer overall voice, then when levelator pulls them into the same range, you're going to hear a lot of like ambient noise made louder by like Tennyson's. Tennyson's voice is like very perfect for anything that's audio. You know, I mean, he's got a great voice, but if somebody else talks softer, then when their voice doesn't have as much bass in it, it's going to pull up all the ambient noise, and just you'll hear this like hiss or like windy sound in the background.
And you can kind of control that with a mixer too by playing with the gain on individual channels, but
and the compression helps as well.
Yep.
But what I found is that Stephanie and I can send you a spreadsheet that Ian actually helped you create, right? For how to.
Oh, I made that myself. I mean, Ian actually is sitting right here in the back of the panel right now. Ian Freeman from the Liberty Radio Network and Free Talk Live, you know, consulted and helped a lot with me setting up my home studio for broadcasting with LRN. But I did most of the research on what equipment to get and how to hook it up myself. And so I did create this spreadsheet of everything that I used and sent it to Brett when he was setting up his studio as well. So it's been around the community a little bit.
Dale Everett, who does Flaming Freedom, also built a studio using the same equipment. Now,
because Dale has a couple of extra, very important extra things, like a rack-mounted compressor.
Yeah. But I was able to you have two mics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with one mic, I was able to save a little bit on, you know, those costs. But initially, you can start, I think it's more than acceptable to start using a USB mic if you're the only one who's going to be on your show.
Mm-hmm. And actually, even
if you're always
even
going
some...
to be the only person on the show, I think if you ever expect to have more people on, you almost certainly want to start with a sort of like the setups that we've all been talking about, which
with a mixer
and a mic. I mean, and again, you can go to thinkingliberty.net, and I think our about page has all the equipment we use.
Address this here. Actually, that's something I just transitioned into a multi-track mixer as opposed to my little 4-channel mixer that I was using for a while, and it's nice because it's got the USB interface plugged right into it. It's a really cheap little kit that came with 2 microphones and these little table stands, which are kind of annoying, but you know, they pick up anytime you set something down on the table or whatever, it's getting picked up in the mic. So but we were using headsets originally, and it's just the sound quality is so much better once you start going through an actual audio mixer. But this little 2-person podcasting kit, I got it for like $120, and it had everything I needed with Audacity right out of the box. So, I mean, it really is a affordable thing to get into, but it's a good idea to play around with equipment, because you can easily go out there and just blow all kinds of money on, you know, some high-end equipment, and then come to find out you don't even want a podcast anymore. So it's good to test the waters and try out different things. Like they were just talking about, there's millions of different ways to adjust the audio quality. So it's really just about finding how you like to do it. Like, you know, I'm doing a weekly cast, and I have all the time in the world I want, basically, to get out one episode. So, like he's running around doing all the controlling stuff behind the scenes. I can get all that stuff set up, hit record, you know, ask my buddy or whoever I'm podcasting with, all right, you ready to go? And have the conversation. And then when we're done, I can cut it all down right there or sleep on it, do it the next day. So that's kind of one of the reasons I like doing it all by myself.
Yeah, lots of people upgrade their equipment as they go along. And, you know, even if you use a single USB microphone just for simplicity, or maybe because you're starting out, you want to see how it is before you invest a lot of money into a setup. There are different modes that you can set microphones to, usually like an omni mode, which picks up all directional sound, a cardioid pattern, which picks up sound from the front, or a stereo pattern, which picks it up from the sides if you're recording something in stereo, like music or something like that. And then there's sort of a two channel mode, which will get the front and the back. So you can play around with microphones and get a lot of different types of sound and some variety, even if you're just using one mic. But yeah, I do highly recommend a mixer if you can make that work.
Because I think with that, you could have a sound that's consistent all the way through, you know, right from the beginning of your podcast, and everything you do will sound like
it. And would the more post-processing that you don't have to do, or the less post-processing you have to do, the easier it's going to be for you and the better it's going to sound.
Yeah, absolutely. Like when I first did I wish I had known this stuff when I started. When I did the first 20 or 30, depending on, you know, your standards for sound quality, you might say first 100 episodes of my show, there was a lot of playing around, and it's kind of serendipitous, but I actually have the evolution of the mics that I've used for the show in this bag.
Oh, nice.
Even though I just found
Let's
out.
See them.
Well, not all of them. The first mic that I ever used when I knew absolutely nothing was $10. It was just like a Dynex stick mic, and we don't have to talk about that.
Did you do any car casting? Because I know a lot of people.
I actually did use that mic for one podcast in the car, where then you just have to spend all of this time doing post-production. So one of the things that can kind of burn people out or wear people out on this is having to play around with things in the post-production to get rid of noise, to get it to sound a certain way. So what Bile said about the mixer is obviously ideal right from the beginning. But, you know, if you want to do this is the microphone that Stefan Molyneux used between 2005 and 2007 when he did podcast in his car, and he would just hold it up to his, you know, the side of his mouth like this. You have to be real close to talk to this. It's just a little Sony mic. You can plug it into a laptop through the 1.5 jack, and this mic was fine for a while. In fact, he sent it to me as an improvement, I think, in the beginning of 2010, when he said, I really like the content of your podcast, but the sound quality is absolutely horrifying. this will be at least a step in the right direction. But this obviously has limitations because of the plug, so it would be good to use in the car. The reason why I have it in my bag is because I have a little camcorder that only has that small jack. So if I'm walking around Porkfest and I want to interview somebody, you know, this will, if I put it right in their face, like really about this close, it'll work for that. Eventually, though, the sound of that it wasn't crisp enough, so I moved to this mic, which is a USB mic. It's in a box because I'm sending it to a guy in Japan named James Corbett, who does a podcast on the Tragedy and Hope Network. And this is just a Samson stained from the head cover USB mic, and I found this to be more than adequate for things that, you know, if you need to use a laptop, like if you're on the go, then this was a fine mic for those purposes. But now that I'm doing the podcast in two places, one at Dale Everett Studio in Manchester, New Hampshire, and one at my house, the mixers are obviously the best solution, because there can be, I don't have to play around with things in post-production anymore. I can set the dials to where they need to be for my voice, for the mics that I have in the room that I'm in, and nothing really has to change from there. So it's been a huge convenience, and nothing needs to be done in post anymore once the audio is recorded. Sometimes I might reduce the noise a little bit, you know, depending if I have a fan running in the room, but other than that, I can just leave it alone and it can go right out as you know, the quality that it is.
Or you could podcast in the nude, so you don't need the fan, right? As long as you're not doing a video cast, or maybe you are, I don't know.
See, this is what we were talking about, keeping the show fresh every 6 months, trying something new.
Right.
So thank you.
Sure thing. And yeah, I want to just echo what Brett said about post-production. Like, it can be wearisome to record a podcast and then listen to it later and before you release it and say, oh, this isn't perfect. I wanted to say this differently, or I want to cut these parts out. I don't really like these parts. And before you know it, you can be spending so much time editing and adding in music and adding in clips of anything, or even rearranging the audio. And so I would say the way to save time on that is sort of to maybe think a little bit about what you want to say beforehand or plan it out and try to, on the fly, minimize saying ums and ahs or whatever you would want to cut out of a produced show. With a live show, you can't cut things out. You can't go back. So it kind of forces you to spend less time doing editing and things like that. But it's sort of another thing to think about, like how much time do you want to be spending editing your show, adding in clips, music, additional content, things like that.
Yeah. I wanted to see if anybody had any questions. I know we're getting pretty close on time here.
Oh, sure thing. Yeah.
Does anybody have any questions since we have these brilliant people up here?
We should have them come up to the mics and ask the question so we can record it for our...
They can podcast with us.
Exactly. They can podcast with us.
Come on up, Nick.
So back when I used to do a podcast of my own when I lived in Grafton, I used to do a podcast every time before I went to bed, which was both a good and a bad idea. It was a good idea because I had so much to reflect upon because the day was pretty much done. It was also bad because almost every single podcast I'd probably yawn or sometimes I'd even call it quits before I was done with my topic because like, I was so tired. I was doing that. But eventually I stopped because I used blip.tv for a while and I tried to like... I wanted to have like the maximum amount of podcasts downloaded but without having to... I don't know if download is the right word. But I wanted to do that without having to pay for something. And I asked a few times on Facebook, and maybe you guys can answer me, but what's a good free website for like to use podcasts? Because that would be my question.
Oh, for hosting or
for distribution? Hosting, for hosting podcasts. I mean, I just kind of did it as a thing for a spare time, I mean, at night. So it wasn't anything serious, and I never really heavily... promoted it past like a Facebook page. So I was just curious about, I guess websites that act as hosts for podcasts, if that makes sense.
Yeah, good question.
Are you guys using Podomatic?
I use Podomatic right now. That costs me $75 a month for the bandwidth that I need. So it's going to be really difficult. I mean, if you want to be able to have stuff that is a lot of megabytes on the internet, I would say YouTube, you know, if you want it to be free. But you could get a few, if you said you're using Blip TV, were you doing something live streaming?
I was just using my iPod. It literally can record my voice, and then I could put it up to my computer through either iTunes or something. I forget the process because it was a while ago. It was last year or so.
It is a good question though, as far as like where to put it. I think one of the ones that people have been talking about being very cheap for a long time because they didn't have bandwidth caps was Libsyn, but now I'm hearing a lot of really fantastic things about SoundCloud, which is where I'm thinking about moving the entire history of my show. Hmm. I want to look at it a little bit closer. Free Talk Live uses SoundCloud. I'm not sure what they used before, but...
Libsyn.
Okay, yeah. So Libsyn was initially suggested to me by Wes Bertrand, who uses it for his Complete Liberty podcast, because there was no bandwidth cap. So Podomatic has bandwidth caps. Like, I'm capped at... 15 gigabytes, I think. No, wait. I can look that up. I'm not sure. But there is a cap, and like they have levels. So you could get a Podomatic account for $10 a month, right? But if you have files that are, say, more than 15 megabytes, and you have more than 100 listeners, there's going to get to a point where that's not good enough anymore. And you're going to need to go up to, I think the next one would be $19 a month. And then the next one is 50, and then the next one is 75. And then if you go beyond that, you need to think about doing something else. I mean, I would like to have... I think it is important that if you have a website, if you have video stuff and audio stuff, you shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket, you know, like if the site is taken down or something like that. So it's good to have... I mean, you can have... embedding on a site from Podomatic or from Libsyn or from SoundCloud.
YouTube.
Yeah, from YouTube. So like YouTube is great because they'll store these huge video files for nothing.
So anything that's video, I would never want to be hosting that or having that on my website. I just want it to be embedded from YouTube. So the same thing goes with audio. I just take Podomatic players and embed them on my website. And, you know, people coming to the website can't tell the difference whether it's there or not because they click it and it plays, and that's all that matters. But I wouldn't want all that stuff in one place in case the site got taken down. All that stuff could disappear at once. So,
yeah, I don't trust any of those websites, and we never used any of those websites. I spend, like, less than $120 a year for a hosting service through HostGator, but there's tons of them, and it's you can have for like $8 a month unlimited bandwidth, multiple websites, multiple domains, and so I have all my websites and thinkingliberty.net all in my hosting service, and I can upload as many files as I want and have unlimited bandwidth with a shared service. The problem is that it's a lot more manual, so I do my post-processing, I tag the file, and then I have to upload it using FTP to my host. Then I create a blog post, and I use WordPress, and there's a WordPress. There's a couple blogging WordPress plugins that, you know, you upload it, and then you just link straight to your file, and it'll pick up the tags and everything, and you type in, you know, what your show's about. But it's great in so much that, you know, I have automatic backup of my website to my home computer. My home computer is automatically backed up using CrashPlan. And so I have it in like three different locations. And I could also upload it to SoundCloud or some other service if I wanted to. But I always have control over my files. And so I keep track of my downloads. I keep track of everything. But I have a background in that kind of stuff, so it's a lot easier for me to do.
Yeah,
But I don't have to worry about SoundCloud going away.
Sure.
Or increases in prices.
And what do you use to keep track?
Keep track of
Downloads and stuff.
Well, the plugins that I use for WordPress
also do that. PowerPress is what it's called.
I use
PowerPress, which is now Blueberry or something like that.
Yes.
It's changed.
Yeah, I don't use that one. There's another one that I use.
My files are also hosted similarly to yours, Bile. They're on a website. There's a hosting account that, you know, multiple websites, as many files as you want. And I haven't had a problem with that. And I do use, my site is based in WordPress and use a PowerPress plugin, which is now Blueberry, as we said.
Yeah.
And they have download statistics.
Yeah.
Pretty good ones, actually.
The only thing is, if you're using shared services, oftentimes while they don't have a bandwidth cap or a file cap, I know HostGator does have a backup cap. So if you use more than like 250,000 files or like 10 gigs worth of data, which is easy to go over when you're doing 50 meg podcasts, they won't back up your data. So you have to make sure that you're backing up your website, and ideally, obviously, you back up whatever you're storing on your home computer. So that's why I have sort of triplicates of all my shows.
Mm-hmm. Does anybody else have any questions from the audience? We are short on time, but maybe
real quick, wanted to say that, you know, we're seeing I talked about how things could be different for your technical skills. So, you know, in the evolution of technical knowledge, we have, you know, me as the most hunched over monkey to this guy who's the upright man at the end. And we're both doing things that worked, right? And we're both doing them in very different ways. So I hope we don't discourage anyone from starting something. Because, you know, it may be, like I said, I wish I had talked to Bile maybe 2.5 years ago, and I had known a lot more when I started doing my show. But I was still able to get the momentum of doing it and getting people interested in it in a way that other people said, I will help. You know, people came along who said, I know what I'm doing. Clearly you don't. Let me help you. Please let me help you. Let me give you a microphone. And just by getting the message out there, which even though I didn't put the work into production quality ahead of time, I do feel like I put a lot of thought into the ideas ahead of time. So if you have something that you're very, very passionate about, and all of this is just building inside you, and you know you don't like to write, and you don't want to make videos about it, and you're tired of ripping your hair out trying to talk to people about it, this was a very easy thing to start doing. And if you get the content part of it right and you're passionate about what you're talking about,
it's okay to start in a simpler form. I mean, it's ideal to start where we're talking about, you know, with mixers and understanding hosting and understanding the best way to store and move and backup files. But to get something started, and even, you know, to get the confidence of having done 5 or 6 of these shows and then scrapping them and then starting a real podcast with better equipment and a better plan, there's nothing wrong with that. But it might even, I mean, I do, one of the things for me is that it's therapeutic. So I was working in these schools for a long time where I had to keep my mouth shut about certain things. So I just wanted to add that. That's it.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think we're going to have to, we're going to have to conclude this panel. Thank you so much. This has been the podcasting panel at Alt Expo, altexpo.org, if you would like to see more about them and what they do. They also have a YouTube channel where all these, lots of these talks will be broadcast.
Very good. Thank you a lot for helping out with this. This was a good little podcasting panel. I enjoyed it. I'm Garrett Fox, and I run a little podcast called the Disindoctrination Podcast. And you can find that at disindoctrination.com, if you can remember the word.
And I'm Bio, or Antonio, and I do Thinking Liberty, thinkingliberty.net. We haven't done a show since January 2012, but if you send us emails and bother Darian, Tennyson, and Bosco, maybe we'll have more.
And I'm Brett Vinat. I'm the host of School Sucks Podcast. My website is schoolsucksproject.com. And please find us on YouTube, like I was saying. Our username is School Sucks Podcast on YouTube. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.